Channel 2 over, Channel 2 over, Channel 2 over, Channel 2 over.
Had some over here one
time. Camel, yeah, that
what
was
you
want to
do
too.
Is just put a can of water and mix it with a can of water and heat it.
Just a can of water.
Mm-hmm.
Just
and
the same amount of water as there
right,
are in there to make
right,
the soup.
That's right. And then you can...
Well, you put the, do you have the water hot
no,
when you put it in there
put
or put
it
in there cold?
And just heat it as hot as you want it. Just so it's mixed up. And you know, that's just pure beef broth.
Yeah. Well, you can't beat that, can you? Camel is about the best you can beat. Well,
I appreciate you.
Listen. Wait now.
Just wait a minute, Mr. Weaver. You got some guy?
I don't give a damn whether it's accurate or inaccurate. In fact, I'll feel very, very uneasy if you tell me. Don't you think that's true?
Oh, that's a terrible thing.
I'll feel
thing.
Very, very
me
uneasy
too.
For that.
Yeah.
And I'll say yeah. I'll say yeah. Anything. Just to, you know, hear more.
Yeah.
And Cookie is someone that I just found baffling, but in that respect that I could get so much out of, and yet I don't give a damn whether it's...
Doesn't make a bit of difference.
Whether it's right, wrong, accurate, unaccurate. But, you know, Guy, you've been into that a long time. Does it cease to baffle you? Have you that you can be absorbed in people's stories and yet not worry about whether they're lies or whether they're accurate? They're not any worries for you.
I don't know about that. The way I'd say it, Nick, I guess it's the second year he died, he picked up that thesis inquiry that he pursued all four. You heard me talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he picked it up from Cookie. Cookie knows all these things about horses, but he don't take care of his horses. And what he did was, he took the idea of the countryside. That the countryside is like that. They know all these things, and they talk all these things, but their practice is somewhat different. And he lived with that awful, and what it did. Now, and here again, you get, now this is something that I worked out, Mark. Maybe I picked it up from somebody. But it's, in my estimation, is Emersonian. The thesis just has to be fruitful. Whoso will be a man must be a nonconformist. You're not interested in the truth of it. You want that to carry it into the experience in order to see the experience.
Yeah.
And that carried Nick, it's a beautiful thing. And he came back and reported on it. I've got 2 or 3 hours of his report on tape. And he came back. He couldn't wait to get back down here one Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
That was when Barbara was here. Now that's, you know, that's kind of...
Yeah.
Not, yeah.
I don't, well, you see, you'd express it in your terms, and my experience would go just a little bit different from yours, you see. And I've never read Whitehead, you see.
That sounds...
Emerson was, what little I've read about Emerson, heard you say about Emerson, very Whiteheadian, very much in the line of Whitehead.
But that's what I found. You never know the truth of the matter.
But you're not concerned to know it, are you?
Well, you try your damnedest. But
suppose Cookie comes out here and says and offers you one of his, as you might say, big excuses for not finishing that field down there.
Yeah.
Would you be just interested in the nature of the excuse itself, or would you be worried about, you know, well, now it's cookie? Well, not to say worried, would you kind of scrutinize it and say, now, could that possibly be really have happened to Cookie in town to keep him away from the farm?
That's right.
Would that cross your mind, or would you just be interested in the excuse?
That's right. I never have checked up on any of them. And I thought about doing it, but I never did.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting. I just didn't have the energy. And
it might destroy your interest in the excuse and certain other...
Well, I'd like to know. Well, put it this way, a little bit
characteristics.
I ought to know more than Cookie about those things so that I wouldn't have to make the inquiry. You see, the thing of it is, he knows more than I do. And he can keep me...
And he has that marvelous timing. He knows when to do these things.
see, we might take the same evidence, you know, and use it in different ways. I think so much about the preachers and learned people out here. This was a little country circuit up until the last year or so. And all the preachers who came out here in the cattle country, vegetable country, and the preachers didn't know anything about cattle or vegetables.
Yeah.
And from my present point of view, it seems sad. They could learn vegetables. They could very easy to learn.
Yeah.
Just raise a crop 1 year and lose $1,000. You learn fast. <See? coughs> It's worth it. It's worth $1,000 to them. But they don't do that. They're talking to vegetable people who don't learn vegetables. That's kind of, you see, I take it a little different from you.
Were you able to be with some of these preachers and see them and talk?
Oh, yes. It's been just recently that I have not been associated with them, and the reason I'm not now is I just don't have time.
Is it still kind of a circuit for
preachers? Yeah, you've got a four-church circuit. Evanston, Micanopy, Shiloh, and Wakarudi. All beautiful churches, and I've been to all of them, Sunday after Sunday after Sunday. At that time, I knew all the people.
So you say it would be helpful for the preachers to know something about vegetables?
Yeah.
To talk to you for their preaching?
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
It would?
Oh, yeah.
I see. I didn't suspect that at all.
Yeah. I ought to be able to pick up more about horses, you see, so I could talk to Ms. Jigger out there. I'm not dumb. I can learn about horses. But you see, there's other things I can do.
Yeah.
I waste a lot of time on you fellas.
Yeah,
not you, but the younger ones.
Yeah,
I waste
you do.
A hell of a lot of
time. No, you don't waste time on that.
It's
no,
a great waste of time. It's not fruitful.
Well, if you bear fruit, and you bear fruit in some occasion, like Nick. Where did you first saw Nick over there on campus? I reckon, did you? Where did you first meet? How did you come to know, get together with Nick? And how did you come to know?
I can tell you exactly. One rainy day, Carlisle Herbert came to the back door with this tall, lean, lanky fella, and said...
Looked like he was half-Indian.
Half-Indian, yes. And said, we want to ride. Well, Carlisle was used to coming out here. I said, don't you think it's a little wet? And that was Nick. He went out and took a look at Molly, and it was love at first sight.
Yeah.
Molly, yeah. Molly is love at first sight.
And we never were on any... illusions as to who he came to see.
That's
and
right.
He lived out here with us for 2 or 3 years.
Yes,
three
or four.
Who is Herbert now? Is he some?
Yeah, it's Walter Herbert's youngest boy in town.
Walter Herbert. Professor Herbert.
Oh, I see.
He had his dolly.
Yeah, but he knew Nick, the Herbert. This
Herbert.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, Nick was
friend.
Their friend.
Oh.
Is so their family their friend.
Oh, I see.
Eschbach. Eschbach had been in school to Walter.
Yeah.
Isn't that right, Finn?
That's right. And Nick was in school in Swanee.
Yeah.
He never went to the university here.
I see. Well,
but anyway, that was the way that happened. And that was all it took.
But now Suzanne, first met her, I guess, in class, was it? Or
when she first time she came up here, she sat right over there in my class and missed one day that term. And that was in fall of 68. And she's been coming out here ever since.
Okay. I was trying to think of some people that have really become absorbed in the country you have here, whom you met on campus, because you indicated that you didn't know what was bearing fruit over there. And I think Suzanne and Nick, you say you didn't meet over there, so he wasn't one of them.
Well, he's the same thing.
But he was a kind of a come from a university Swanee, you said.
Yeah, he just
so. Really can. And Rick. Well,
I certainly don't think you're wasting time on kids like me.
There's been a whole lot.
But you've influenced me.
The only trouble with them is I don't have a fair shot at them. You see, they stop before they learn quite enough for it to do them any good. Now, when they're in my class, I can teach them how to report. I can teach them one term, but I can't make them do it. Now, if they've come out here a few times, I can get them going. But I still got to have them in class again for their reporting. You see, I can let them report like Cookie reports.
Why don't you?
Suzanne does.
Well, why do you have to have them back in class?
You have to have hold of them.
But see that they can do it.
They won't do it on the side.
You can't do it on the side.
We don't, and Guy never cared about having a bat in class. Yeah. He'd rather not.
You see, Suzanne will sit in here, and I'll turn the tape on, and it doesn't affect her inside it. She just conditioned to it.
I see.
And if anything, it helps her, makes her, and she'll report, and she can be Cookie 6-1.
Yeah.
And what she says is correct.
Well, she's not doing the same thing as Cookie's doing. Cookie's she's telling about Cookie. She's not living Cookie. She's telling about Cookie.
That's right.
Telling about how Cookie lives instead of telling not living it as Cookie. Does Suzanne report about her own life?
No, that's right.
Well, then she's not reporting in the same way that Cookie does.
No, she's a scholar.
Yeah. It must be something, I guess, in common.
But
Barbara did it.
Barbara did it like Cookie.
She was
the
one who was in
the room. I've got 10 reels of tape that Barbara made when she was here.
And Barbara would sit right there, and she'd take hold of the microphone. She'd take hold of the microphone and hold it, because she wanted to report this to get it down instead of writing.
Yeah.
Was she ever in one of your classes?
Yeah.
She wasn't in my class. Yes, she went up there. But mostly she stayed out here and worked with the horses and read.
I see. So she learned from visiting you, being with you out here, more than from meeting you.
She put all her time in on the Emerson reading.
I see.
For one term.
Where is she now?
Greensboro College. She's graduated.
Well, there's some girl that mother and dad tell me was at a get together after the wedding of my sister.
That's Debbie Bowers.
Oh, that was some other one. Oh, I see.
She's in Nice, France.
Yeah.
But she'll be back this summer. She's one of guys. She really is.
She's Missy is her friend.
Absorbed in the people around here, and can she describe them and talk to you about them in the way that Barbara can? Can Debbie do
she
that?
She doesn't use them at all.
Oh, she's absorbing the horses, and she's, I guess, is that it?
She uses her own experiences.
But she's had some.
She talks about where you're sitting right there, that's her place, as being a haven. That's her haven.
Oh, be here?
Right here in this kitchen.
Yeah.
This is her haven.
Yeah.
And she's been all over the world, and she's everywhere else.
Yeah.
And this is her haven. She had even strong thoughts about not going to Nice, because she needed at least a month right here.
Well, why did she go to Nice? Just for the adventure?
Well, that's what the universities do. They get you into all sorts of fanatical expedition.
Oh, go over there and you learn something about human
she's
beings.
She's at the university,
you go
isn't she? She said she's over there reading him.
Over
she's
there
reading,
there reading,
reading.
Oh, but like me going over over Germany to read Whitehead. That's too bad.
I ought to read Debbie's letter to him.
Well, yeah, I'd like to meet some of these people, some of the kids,
she'll
people
be back,
my age who have
be
been over here
June.
With you all. Now, Suzanne, I'll see you on occasion. I haven't really been up there. And Jim, I just met today. So I would.
Well, now, Jim's a good egg. And he's not literate at all. So he'd make a good sidekick. I think, would you think?
Yeah. He's, you know.
And I think he's a good sport. He'll take on anything, I think.
Yeah, maybe.
You know,
he's
like
not aggressive.
Not
know.
Aggressive.
You know,
everyone there is aggressive.
Well, he's not. But he's a good sport.
I think the high point out here was when Barbara was here and Nick was here, and Barbara had pupils, and she taught them on those my horse out there.
Yeah.
Noopy.
Yeah.
Oh, she had Noopy. He was a trained. She was a trained horse when Bob was here. And you see, we had those two out here, and anybody could come out here, any number of people. You see, and it wasn't the way of saying me out. We had a groom, and you see, that's what I suffer from. I need these youngsters who be grooms.
Oh.
And with that, you see, the place would blossom and flourish.
Yeah.
Now, this last time, you see, I haven't had any energy for it much, really, out here. I've been trying to bring it to a close and arrange something up there where I could pass on to them some of the things that is going on out here that they don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
The people who've been running the damn mill up there, you see.
Yeah.
And made it possible for me to do this. I'd like to pass what I've been trying to do. But it's very difficult to see to get a hearing.
Find out. Why it's so difficult to get a hearing.
Well, they're willing, Mark, but they've got so many commitments.
Everybody's so busy.
Especially older people, you see. That's the hell of it. They've got commitment.
Well,
cool.
And everybody's got his little thing. You know, thing.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it's not that so much, Faye. They just not the same.
Could it be a grad students? Well, that's who you're working with, and you have yet to find grad students who would. Isn't there some sort of assistantship or some sort of aid that can be given to a grad student to help a teacher if the teacher's project, if the student finds much of interest himself in that project?
Sure, I'd pay them if I found anybody.
The university, come out of the university, or as a kind of thesis. but as you indicated to me earlier, it's a kind of a drop-it affair. They do it, and then I guess they say, this is the end now. I've got my thesis done. I'm doing other things. And you would need someone to work with you to see that things through, I guess, more or less completed state, arranged state with what you've got.
John is the right age for this. How old is he, Faye?
15.
15 or 16. That's Dr. Green's boy.
Hmm.
You know him?
I don't know any. I don't want to know.
He's a new head.
Oh.
And his boy is 15 and
yeah.
wears and comes out here and brings one of his buddies.
Yeah.
And they're just the right age. And they don't know too much, but they can learn, you see.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, you know, how to handle the horses, how to drive the tractor. He's talking about that sort of thing.
Oh,
not,
I see.
Not the, the other thing.
Yeah, I thought that you were wondering about whether or not you get help and get people to see that you've got quite a collection of good material here from listening to people, of tapes and things you've written out. Whether you could get people sufficiently interested in this to help you organize it and
well, some shape. They can't use the tapes. They're too slow. They have to have it boiled down.
Tapes are too slow.
Yes. You see, I learned a good bit from you when you first came, when you talked, and then you quit talking. But I learned a vast amount from you. You see, I listen to all of them who come. And as long as they keep talking, you see, I'll learn. And that's the way it is in class. I listen to them. I've learned to listen. And I don't teach what I know. I teach what I pick up from them. And that's the way it goes. I don't have any ideas. If anything, it's as far as I'm concerned, I learn sort of slow.
And you learn cause what?
I learn sort of slow.
Slow learner. Is there some virtue in that? Is there something good in that? Really, that's a serious question. I've pondered about it myself. I've tried to justify my own learning process.
It takes me a long time. I have hit me over the head several times so I can see.
See, the difference between, one of the big differences between me and Guy is that Guy knows when he doesn't know. And I don't.
I don't know it, but I say so.
I'm worried these quick learners.
Well, all of the young ones who come out here are way on ahead of me. But see, I read everything they write, and I read it and look at it closely. And whenever they tape, I study the tape to learn. And so you see, I learn a whole lot more than they do. They're brighter than I am, but they're not as patient, whatever it is.
I don't reckon Cookie's over there now. In fact, I don't feel like seeing him because I've just seen Frank. Anytime I see Frank these days, I'm hesitant to see Cookie. Just afterwards, anyway. Well, maybe I'll catch next Sunday. I better go along now.
But let me tell you, Mike, what I have noticed is, and there's and you see, you can see these things better than I can because you're closer to it. And I'm thinking about the young people now, not the older people. But the younger people now have been brought up in this feeling, you see, that they ought to be interested in people and like people, love people, but they don't know anything about them. Interested in civil rights, all like that. But they don't know anything about the people that they're getting the rights for. And furthermore, they can't make contact with them. I think it's universal. I think the whole thing, I think it's all like that. And you get a job.
Yeah.
And the job you get will hold you away from people.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, just look how well you know.
You see, you went out of your way to get this, but you take a job up there at the secretary or teaching, for that matter. And the teachers don't know the students.
All right, that's what. Right. Well, it's hard to get a student to talk with you as someone. On their level, as someone who is not, they presume that in some way that you're an authority. It's hard, and I'll never be seen by anybody as an authority. I've declared to myself this will never be. I'll never be seen as an authority by anyone. I'll try my best to avoid anything like that. I think I'll succeed very easily. I don't have anything to rest on. I think there are a few sensitive people, kids, who, well, take the example that you give, who are who have quite a bit to say, to talk about with regard to civil rights and the poor conditions under which a lot of people work and have to live. But I think there's some sense to people who have a lot to say in this regard, and yet who are becoming more and more interested in, not only interested, but actually living under those conditions, side by side. I think you'll find some of the young people in the civil rights living, for example, in ghettos. In fact, you know, there are two, one on the domestic scope and one on a foreign scope, of programs financed by the government, federal government. One's the Peace Corps and one's the Job Corps. The Job Corps is intended to get people into, for example, the Appalachian area. We can't tell what these people want by sitting in Washington. You're going to have to get into Appalachia, the Appalachian Mountains of Kentucky, North Carolina, Tennessee, in order to help those people. So you'll find people in what's called Job Corps. You've heard of it, about that.
Right.
Now, I guess that's the same sort of thinking that's behind the Peace Corps. We cannot help these other countries unless we work side by side with this in the same sort of poor conditions under which they work, their limited tools,
mm-hmm.
poor soil, whatever the conditions are. So I think, you know, there is some recognition that unless you immerse yourself into the lives of the people that you talk about, that you presumably work on behalf, you're not going to really help them or help yourself. I think there's some awareness of that.
Well, I think it's superficial.
Well,
I don't think the people who run it or the younger people who do it actually can make contact with the people where they go. Going to the ghetto doesn't enable them to make contact with anybody.
You want to
go to the ghetto to see what they're doing.
It's not going into the ghetto as, well, let's go there once a week. It's living there for a while. But then, of course, they're gone after several months of work. I can't be as pessimistic as you are about that. I know that there are an increasing number of young people who are trying to pick up skills that enable them to survive in the country, on vegetable farming, for example. And it's true that I think they're completely absorbed, as I am, into bettering their own selves. The language is rather flowery, psychological language. Better our individual consciousnesses rather than trying to sacrifice them for some sort of Black Panther revolution, you know, all the talk. So this is what they're willing to do, but I think they become so absorbed in trying to lead a happier life themselves, and because a lot of them go through the agony I do. They just look at where they were with their parents and where they were going when going as their parents would want them to do, and they say, "Well, no, this won't be. I gotta have a better world for myself." I don't know whether that attitude, when they get into the country, will enable them to see other people that don't go through there.
The
people across the lane there.
It takes such a little attitude to blind you. Just such a little attitude, you see, will blind you.
Mm-hmm.
Completely blind you. And I can give you my own cases of me. I can give you one right after another where I have had brilliant ideas, and all it did was blind me. Nothing is quite so blinding as a good idea, you know. And when you write an idea, it shatters all your experience. And that's not metaphysical, that's just plain common sense. I learned that from Mr. Morrison in the fall of 68. That's my toehold. I had spent a summer, I've told you this several times, and I it got so it was just painful to me to hear the talk. Mr.
Gilbert.
Yeah.
Miss Morgeson. I just hated to hear that talk and not be able to keep it. I used to carry around that little old recorder on my shoulder, and it wouldn't record very well, you see. And I tried to take down a little bit. And it got so painful, I just, for a good bit of that summer, I didn't go around him. I couldn't stand to hear him talk. It was so beautiful. And still, I had no words for it. And then, it all happened almost in a day. I had that little machine, and I went up and saw Mrs. and Mrs. Patterson, and they were had the clothes on, ready to go to town to buy groceries. Mr. Patterson was sitting back in that big easy chair his grandchildren gave him. And they talked about just common things. And I went back on the way home. I stopped at Mr. Gilbert's. And he took me around his plantation up there and showed me his cinnamon tree and his one thing and another.
Yeah.
And he talked all the time. And one little thing was that people down here left the machinery out and let it rot. And I talked to Mr. Morganson, and that was, he was a great Wallace man.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, as I listened to that tape again and again and again, the man is fanatic. And I kept looking at it to see what made him fanatic, and I found out he was saying the same thing as the others. Absolutely the same thing, except he was overstating it. And it shattered his experience. All you did was just overstate it. I made, that's the first toehold I had. I made those two statements, one followed another. I said, now Mr. Patterson and Ms. Patterson, Mr. Gillis, all that talk, that's so rich, is just that experience. They talk from their experience. And from that followed a statement that their experience is informative. It has to do with information. Now, I already had in my mind the category, the Freudian category, that I got from James, the governess in the turn of the school. She's Freudian. And James is making her turn from Emersonian to Freudian. In there. That gave me that term. And Freudian for us is that we are constantly super sensitive to what other people say about us. It makes us nervous. It makes us turn phrases and quip. And there was no quipping, no phrase turning, you see.
And so the people you listen to,
right.
Patterson and
that's
Hilbert?
Right. Not what.
No phrase turning, no quip.
No quip. And no reacting to people and what people think of. And you see that the high point of the governess is when James sees it, the Freudian thing takes over, where she closes her world to the others. It's a break. The Freudian break. You cut people off. Now that never happened until Freud. It never happened before that. The world wasn't made that way. Cookie doesn't cut people off.
Yeah, he's not Freud.
Mm-hmm. So you see, I see these people in slightly different terms. I see them a lot in Emersonian terms, and terms that grow out of that. And the leisure is one of the old terms too, you see, that Thoreau has and Whitman has and Emily Dickinson has, is that leisure that that your colored man has. I don't know why I could have
Coat 45.
He has.
He would have.
And undoubtedly And Cooney has it. Even though he races around, he still has that in his speech and his behavior. He has it. He grew up with it, and he still has it. And you see, you can take the man from the country or from Appalachia or Mississippi and put him in the ghetto somewhere, and it'll shatter him until he loses that leisure and dignity. But Cooley hadn't lost it. I don't know how. He's preserved it. And he's had some hellacious experiences, you know.
Yeah. He sat there one time I was hearing him talk, and he was talking about Frank, and he said, Frank wasn't brought up to do that. Just with the greatest of dignity.
Great dignity. Yeah.
Frank wasn't brought up to do that. It was some scoundrel.
Yeah.
Frank. Could you bail him out of jail, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well.
The categories I use largely, you see, the ones I pick up from, you know, the things I work in, Emerson, Snow, Franklin. Largely.
And what amazes me is that, what really baffles me is that the categories you pick up from them, the ways of looking at things, help you to understand people who don't have those categories at all. They don't have Emerson categories. They don't talk. They don't look at things in the way Emerson does. Emerson was when you're talking about categories, you wouldn't say they had his categories, would you?
No, they're Emersonian, though.
They're Emersonian, but...
But Guy would have to be the kind of person he is. Like you.
Yeah, you're talking about the categories that Emerson makes for Emerson being a scholar, being a writer, being able to...
I told you what they were, you see, the dignity and that feeling of leisure.
Yeah, I mean, they don't talk about it. You don't see them talk about dignity.
No,
you know, so these are, I see what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing.
Right.
And then
there's no set categories. It's, you know, you just use what comes to you.
Yeah.
It enables you to see if it's fruitful.
That you can converse with them and understand them with those categories, which are not the ones they use. They don't come to you and talk about their dignity or about the people that they have leisure time is responsible for their being able to.
Oh, they're not scholars at all.
Yeah.
Now, the only people I work with are Emersonian. You see, I'm helpless in the suburbs. But what I have tried to do is transfer it. I can show the young people how to look out here in the Emersonian world, where it's clearer. Then they can transfer it to the suburbs or the office. But I can't take it there, you see. I'm not at home there.
Just like this former student of Guy's who's working in Miami, just came.
Yeah.
And he's looking at some of his workers there at Winn-Dixie in Miami.
Unloading them big cars.
And he's doing it in an Emersonian way. He's doing it like Guy.
And this is now who?
This is Rick. Me. Rick Brown.
Oh, Rick worked out here, didn't he?
Yeah.
I'm going to give you time to read that sort of thing and be by yourself on Sunday evening. I don't want to take you.
Well, it's just fun. This, I feel, almost like a celebration.
We heat you up for that.
You have. Need some fresh air.
Yeah.
Open the door right now.
I open the door before we faint.
George, good
to be with you.
Now, I'll tell you, anytime you've got time, come by. See, if we're busy, we'll go ahead while we're doing.
I don't have I have a full day off Sunday, but I need to see Cookie soon. He's surviving, which he tells me he's not going to do it for a week.
Channel 2 over. We're on 700 and the end of the visit with Mark. This Sunday at supper, the 23rd of January, 72. Now, this is continued from the other reel. Now, there's just half of it on this reel, and the first half, or the first side, is on the other cookie reel. Now, this is channel 2 over around 700, and the end of the visit with Mark this Sunday at supper, the 23rd of January, 72.